Congressman Collin Peterson, longtime Democrat, member of the United States House, former chair of the House Ag Committee, really has forgotten more about agriculture than the vast majority of certainly anybody in the media, and dare I say, even much of the ag community, and has been a good friend over the years. He's what we call a normal Democrat, and I don't think there's many left. It's kind of an extinct thing. I don't know. Most of them are in a museum now. And we got Collin out of the museum today to help us out here. Collin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Collin has formed something called the Midwest Council on Ag. You can find out more about it at MidwestCouncil.org because obviously agriculture is so important to this part of the country. And if you don't speak in numbers and there's a dwindling amount of rural voices in the political arena altogether, so somebody has to speak for them. So how's things going at the council?
They're going very well, and the reason I started this was to try to give a better voice for the Midwest in the whole ag policy area, and that's happening. They're paying more and more attention to us. And then the other thing that happened is John Holman helped me get an appropriation for NDSU to start a policy center at NDSU, and that got stood up here about a year ago, and they're doing a great job of getting that organized, and so we finally have a voice other than University of Missouri and the University of Texas weighing in on those policy issues. Now we have one in our part of the world, and that's also a big help to us.
It is, because those two schools you mentioned were juggernauts of impacting policy, and obviously Midwest is a powerhouse in ag, so we should have a seat at that table, so I'm really glad you did that. Overall, how would you assess the farm economy right now in our part of the world, Collin?
Well, in our part of the world, it's people are concerned about where this is heading, but it's not a panic situation in our part of the world. Some of the bankers told me that last year, over 70% of the farms were profitable, but there is concern about where this is all heading, and so that's out there. But the problem is, in other parts of the country where they grow cotton and rice, peanuts, some of these other crops, they're in significant trouble. And they're the ones that are pushing, for additional bailouts from the government to keep them in business.
Are bailouts ever a good – it's just a Band-Aid, isn't it?
It is a Band-Aid, but sometimes you don't have a choice. It gets bad enough. You remember the 80s. Maybe you don't remember the 80s. But
I graduated in 83. I just remember my dad lost his business because of 20% interest rates, and farmers, same thing. It impacted everybody for sure.
Yeah. So that was a serious situation. And actually what got us out of that primarily was CRP. We put 45 million acres into CRP, and that took that production off the table, and that probably did more to bring those prices back than anything. But what's going on now is we're just in a cycle where the farmers are, I think, expecting a check from the government every year. And, this points out how the ag policy that we have in place is not working. It's not doing the job for the government, for the farmers, for agribusiness, for anybody, because every year we're having to send money to farmers. And that's based on what the situation in agriculture was 30 years ago.
And,
so that's part of it.
President Trump has certainly continued that, both in his first term and in his second term. And by the way, there's a event Friday at the White House I've been invited to, where 1,000 farmers supposedly are going to be there, and the White House is rolling out a number of policy proposals and I think some answers on biofuels from the EPA, or maybe even more payments in lieu of the disruption, I guess, that's coming as it relates to the trade deals. Do you agree with that? I mean, philosophically, it sounds like you're saying these payments are not the long-term fix at all, but given that we're in a sort of battle of who's going to blink first with China again, is that a good bridge?
Well, the bridge that they did, $12 billion, is being sent out there right now. And I've talked to a number of my neighbors that got checks from the government. So I'm not going to criticize that necessarily, but that is not what we should be doing. We should be looking at the farm policy and why the safety net is not adequate to work for farmers and bankers. And that, you know, and we're not doing that. We're just giving out checks to kind of shut people up for the next year. And that's getting us down the road in a way that's not helpful, I think, to the long-term situation. So I don't know how anybody can say that the farm policy we have is working when you have to have a bailout every year. You know, I think that should send
How much is that problem, if you will, of not good long-term smart ag policy the result of just not enough rural voices in Congress?
Well, that's probably part of the problem, but I think you know, we can kind of point our finger at ourselves a little bit because, you know, we have not been insisting on looking at this, and everybody has kind of been circling the wagons and protecting what they've got, you know, and I understand that, but I don't think that's the right answer for the long term, you know, so...
I mean, is there anything more important to Main Street and small towns, and by small towns, I mean... every town in North Dakota, big and small, and most of Minnesota as well, how ag goes is how those communities go. So, you know, it isn't just about, hey, let's take care of the farmers. It's about take care of our rural economy, period. Yeah. So serious stuff. I want to get your take when we come back from the break on what would be the right policy and what direction you're concerned it would be going that would be the wrong policy when we come back. Back on What's on Your Mind, Colin Peterson is with us, former longtime chair of the House Ag Committee. Back when there were normal Democrats in the town called Washington, D.C., man alive. You ever seen anything like this, Colin? I mean, AOC and Rashid Tlaib. And I heard the leader, the Democratic leader the other day say that Iran is going to end in failure. Weeks in, we got troops going right now, and it's like they're rooting for failure. It just is mind-boggling to me. It's got to be frustrating for you, too.
It is, you know, and... frankly, the other side isn't perfect either, Scott.
Well, I'm not saying they are, but I'm just saying,
I know the only thing that the Democrats have going for them, or the Republicans, is how bad the Democrats are.
and my deal is they get up every day, the Republicans do, advocating things that they've been advocating for forever, right? I mean,
I don't want to get into that whole debate.
No, I don't blame you either, but I miss Colin Peterson Democrats. That's all I'm saying.
That's a big problem. You know, 98% of the country, ag country, is represented by Republicans. And that is a big problem, because you can't do policy with one party.
Yeah,
it's not going to be sustainable.
Yeah, who's the biggest champion of agriculture in the House on the Democratic side?
Well, it was Andrew Craig, and now she's running for the Senate. You know, so her and Amy have been, you know, been listening to farmers, have been talking somewhat sensible policy.
Yeah. I think Angie Craig fits the Colin Peterson model of a Democrat. Unfortunately, now that she has to run against that crazy Peggy Flanagan, she's having to kowtow to the other side. So we'll save that for another day. We have two.
Yeah, no,
it just frustrates me. Yeah. We have two members of the Turning Point USA NDSU chapter with me, and I want to involve them in this conversation as well for you, Colin. Titus and his family farm up by Roseau, your old 7th district there. And he was telling me during the break about fertilizer prices. Tell me the story you told me for Colin here.
So March 9th, fertilizer costs jumped about 16% in a single day. And like our farm, we're pretty much like essentially on an auto program. Like we need to buy it anyway. So we bought it right before the increase. But then we hear back from the dealership we get it from, like, you guys barely missed this. Costs went up 16% in a single day following a few days after we actually bought ours ahead.
And, of course, some of that's because of Iran, obviously, but how does it go up the day of, right? The price didn't, and I understand there's futures and everything else, but we don't control enough of our own destiny as it relates to fertilizer, which is why this happens. Growers are held hostage, aren't they, Colin?
Yeah, we don't control enough of our destiny in a lot of areas, including the trade area. You know, that's not something you can go to the bank on either, because it just changes every day. So, you know, we have to come up with a policy that works for the United States, and recognizes the dangers in some of this situation, like the dangers of trade agreements, the dangers of input costs going up the way they are. We're not really offsetting that risk with the farmers. You know, we have crop insurance, and that's good, but obviously it's not adequate when people come in and want additional money. So that's why I've got NDSU and some others taking a look at what we're doing and coming up with ideas about what we can do to change things. Now, I don't have an answer today about what we should do. I can tell you what we shouldn't do and tell you what's wrong. But, you know, it seems like we can't ever get enough of a space in between the bailouts to actually get that conversation going about what should be done long term. So, So we're going to try to work on that. And we have so many problems. The input costs are a big problem. And just think about this. Why, if agriculture is in so much trouble, why does land price and land rent go up every year?
And that's a good thing compared to the 80s, at least, though, right? I mean,
but that doesn't make any economic sense.
No, I hear you.
You know, if it was really this much of a problem, that would not be happening. And part of it is the bailouts that we're doing, the way they're being done, I would say, are not helping the farmers. The farmers are getting the money, but it's going directly into land prices, into land rent prices, and it's going into input costs. And the farmers are just a conduit, and they're not getting, you know, enough to offset those things. It's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it really is, and that's why I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. Titus, share the question you brought up during the break for Congressman Peterson.
You mean?
I'm sorry, Hayden. Titus just talked. Now it's Hayden's turn. City boy, I'll add.
Not a city boy. I'm from the country. It's just my family doesn't farm, so I'm rural.
Okay.
But not farmers, but I have a bit of a contrarian question, especially for, you know, living in North Dakota. And my question is why does the farming industry seem to get this special carve out of federal help compared to every other business? I mean, like I've done a roofing business and I didn't get any government money to make sure that my business doesn't go under.
And I'm sure
50% of businesses go bankrupt in 5 years, but it feels like we spend tens of billions of dollars, and every few years we will spend a couple $100 billion to make sure that farmers don't go bankrupt. And I'm wondering, like, I believe in capitalism. I don't believe that people should get special distinction. I mean, like 2008, the banks did, and rightfully so. All of us conservatives really upset about that, about those bailouts. They should have went under. Why do farmers get this special treatment compared to all the other businesses?
Well, part of it is historical, but part of it is that farming is unlike any other business because you don't control the price of your product. You don't control the amount of output because it's based on the weather and other conditions. You don't control much of anything. You know, as people say, you're price takers, not price makers. So the free market system is not, not something that works all of the time for agriculture. And we've proven that over the years. And that's part of how we started out with the bailouts, because when they did Freedom to Farm in 96, where they phased out price supports for farmers, 2 years later, we had to spend billions of dollars to bail out the farmers because it didn't work. You know, so you have to understand that agriculture is unique. It's got more dangers, if you will, and more things that you cannot predict. Now, if you're in the roofing business, I think you can kind of predict, you know, what your business is going to be. If you're in the accounting business, whatever, you know. But in agriculture, you're just depending on so many things that are beyond your control. And so what we've tried to do is recognize that. And, you know, that's part of where crop insurance came from. This actually came from Bob Berglund when he was secretary back in the 70s.
Roseau Boy.
That's where it
Roseau Boy yeah, there,
that's
Titus.
That's where it all started.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd been working on that for years. He finally got it done. And they started off having the government run it. And that was a disaster. And so then they stopped it. And then they turned around and did a public-private partnership between the government and insurance companies that were created to provide the insurance. And that worked. You know, and so I am not for the government running agriculture. I'm not for the government setting prices. But I am for the government recognizing how dangerous or how much risk farmers are taking. And that's where we have to step in.
And, of course, the other element is our competitors around the world are, handing those checks out, subsidizing, and to level the playing field. Either do it or you don't have U.S. agriculture feeding the world, which is a real national security issue. Before I let you go, Colin, I do want to get kind of your prescription of how we do this. And if we don't get that right, what could happen? We'll do that after the break on What's on Your Mind. Don't go away. Back on What's on Your Mind, brought to you today by the Schott Ranch down there in beautiful Moat Bridge, South Dakota. Tomorrow at 12:30, they have a cutting-edge production sale. And the Schott family is the kind of folks where a handshake and your word still actually hold value. They're fantastic. Coffee and pastries at 8, then the cattle available for viewing at 8:30, then they serve lunch at 11:30, and then the production sale starts at 12:30, okay? So I'd encourage you to check this out and go join them, okay? They'll be doing great things. If you go to Schott, Schott, ShottRanch.com, you'll have all the details there. I don't know what it is, Colin, but you go to one of those bull sales and they feed you enough for a week. Have you ever noticed that?
I know. I started off my ag career going to sales in South Dakota to buy my 4-H calves for showing. So I know all about it, and I've went to many of those places over the years.
And the better they feed you, the more you buy.
I think that's the attitude.
Yeah, exactly. It's all home cook, and mom's working in the kitchen all weekend. 41 yearling bulls, 8 2-year-old bulls, 18 bred heifers, 16 yearling heifers. So it's going to be a dandy tomorrow in Mobridge again. ShottRanch.com, Schott. So two questions for you. You're concerned about the direction this is going. Give me a half a minute on what worries you. What would be the wrong direction?
Well, I think just keeping the government giving money to farmers, and not differentiating between different parts of the country and different crops and so forth, I think is problematic. But what I'm more worried about is that I think the public is going to turn against us if this keeps going on. And I'm already hearing some of that now, that people say, as was brought up by one of your people there, why are we doing this? I just think we're going to have a problem, getting the support we need to make sure we have the right kind of safety net if we keep this out. So
what's a better way? If you were king for a day again, you're Secretary of Agriculture, you're chair of the House Ag Committee, you got all the cred, the cred you do as your career, and now with the Midwest Ag Council, what's the perfect way?
Well, the perfect way is probably not achievable, but we should come up with a system whereby you can get enough, you can buy enough coverage to satisfy your banker and to keep you in business from year to year. But you should pay something for that. You shouldn't get it for nothing. So we'd have to set up a system whereby you'd have to pay for part of that, and it would have to be somewhat market-oriented. So that would be ideal. You'd have to, and in order to make this work, you'd have to get an ironclad pact with the administration and the Congress that they're not going to do any ad hoc bailouts, because that's what undermines the system. Farmers say to me now, well, why should I worry about it? I'm going to get a check from the government anyway. That's not the way we should do in doing things. So do I have the answer, right on my top of my head about what the solution is? I can tell you what the problem is. What we're doing now is a problem. And you brought, before the break, you brought up Brazil. Brazil is a huge problem. They double crop down there, so they get 60, 70 bushel soybeans first crop. And now they're double cropping primarily with cotton. They're getting 5 bale cotton, where in the United States a bumper crop is 3 bales. So they're getting twice the amount of money per acre. And their land is selling for like $5,000 an acre. And ours is selling for 10. Or 20. So we have a lot of problems facing us, and beyond the weather and all the other things. And we haven't got an adequate policy out there that will offset it. And as I say, it's being undermined all the time by our own government, by it's both parties, by sending out money and not having it tied to what makes sense.
I know what you're saying, and that's going to take some Herculean effort, but thankfully we have you and the coalition and the good folks at NDSU trying to bust through all that. So keep at it. Thanks for updating us today. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thank you, guys. We'll see you.
Okay. Take care. Colin Peterson, former House Ag Chair, and I always say forgot more about agriculture than most of us, for sure.